The Customer Spotlight series of the Grin Gets Real podcast is meant to highlight Grin brands who are successfully leveraging creators as part of their marketing strategy. Each brand shares their brand story and insight on how creators add value to that story. And in each episode, we dive into who the brand is, their customer creator program, and the impact the creator economy has on their brand. Today, I am chatting with Dimitri O, co-founder of Loop Earplugs. Loop Earplugs has redefined what an earplug should sound, look, and feel like. Whether it's hearing protection or comfort for your ears, Loop enables you to live life at your volume. So sit back, relax, and get ready to listen to the Loop Earplugs story of influencers and creators as a strategy. Dimitri, welcome to the Grin Gets Real podcast. You are on our special customer spotlight episode, which I'm really stoked about because it means that we get to highlight you and your brand and what you're doing with creators.
Well, stoked to be here, Katya. So thanks very much for having me on.
Absolutely. Well, let's get started. Share a little bit about who Loop Earplugs is, like where it all got started. Tell me your origin story.
Sure. Loop was actually born from a passion and a frustration, a passion that I share with my good friend and co-founder, Maarten Bodeus. And we've known each other for 20, 25 years, something like that. Used to club all the time, go to festivals and concerts, these kind of things. So definitely sharing that passion for everything that has to do with live music. But unfortunately, like most people know, one day or another, you will get this like ringing tone in your ears, right? Same happened to us. Today is something that I'm suffering from day in, day out. I have what they call tinnitus, which means mm-hmm. that silence does not exist for me anymore. There's just a ringing tone somewhere in the back of my mind that I'm hearing all the time. And that is sort of where the frustration part of the story comes in. Because as much as we liked going out, we absolutely hated the earplugs that we had to wear in order to prevent this tinnitus of becoming worse. And that didn't make too much sense for us, because when we were looking around at other products that are quite close to the category of earplugs as we are, we actually saw a lot of products that we loved. Let's say, for example, earphones. There you have all these really comfortable, crazy looking, expensive, like status symbol kind of products. They're really, really nice to wear. Whereas typically with earplugs, these are uncomfortable. They mute or muffle the sound, which is absolutely not ideal if you're in a nightlife setting. And probably the most important problem is that they just don't look nice, especially when you're young, you want to go out, you want to meet some people, and then you have this fluorescent stuff sticking out of your ear. Absolutely horrible. So first of all, we really didn't like the features of the products in our category of earplugs. So let's see if we can redefine what an earplug should sound, look, and feel like. Mm-hmm. And then there was this other challenge that the category as a whole was suffering, in the sense that it's just not cool to wear earplugs. Yeah. And there also, we saw other categories, like, for example, helmets being used on a ski slope. Well, 20 years ago, no one or virtually no one was wearing these helmets. And it was only these very dull and ugly fluorescent sort of pots that people used to wear on their head, being forced by their parents. Come in GoPro, Red Bull, brands like that, that actually make it very exciting. And today it's like a status symbol. The guys wearing a mask on a helmet on the ski slope are the ones that go fastest or highest or hardest or whatever. So they completely change that image of protective gear.
Yeah.
And I think that's also what needs to happen to the earplug category in order for people to really adapt them and use them on a daily basis and prevent suffering from hearing damage like I do day in, day out.
So it's Loop Earplugs is protective gear. Tell me about like who your ideal customer is. Obviously it's the nightlifer, like you had originally described from your origin story, but who else is part of like that customer pool? Because I also hear earplugs, I hear protective, but am I going to actually wear them? You have such a great story of like that shift from your who your customer used to be to who it is now as well.
Absolutely. And there's been quite some evolution in our ideal customer in the last, let's say, 3 years.
Yeah.
So indeed, initially, we were very much focused on nightlife. It was everything that the brand was about. Our tagline was protect your ears in style, and everything that we communicated was very much nightlife based. And one of the key turning points there was in August 2019, when we were voted top pick earplugs for concerts by the New York Times. And it was really awesome for us. Second part of of 2019 was really good for us, growing. January, February were good as well. And then March 2020, something happened mm-hmm. in the world. You might have heard something about it. COVID, right? And COVID was a very drastic happening for us on two levels. First mm-hmm. of all, we were active in three different channels, being our own webshop, marketplaces such as Amazon and retail. Mm-hmm. And Amazon and retail basically shut down from one moment to the other. So two out of three channels for us were gone.
Yeah.
And second of all, the people that were still on our own webshop that we had access to, well, they weren't going out anymore. So protecting your ears in a nightlife environment was just not relevant. So very drastically, in a week's time, we lost about 80% of our revenue just like that. And back then, we basically turned to our customers mm-hmm. and asked them, like, if not for nightlife, what else do you use your earplugs for? We combined that with a brainstorm of our own experience when we use earplugs outside of nightlife. And out of that, and 6 to 8 months later, came a variety of audiences, and maybe I should say use cases or user moments instead of audiences, because they really blend heavily into each other. And where the insight came that protection, hearing protection, is only really a fraction of why people use earplugs. I'm going to give you a couple of concrete examples. When people sleep with earplugs, it has nothing to do with hearing protection, right? When people are going back to the office these days and they're again being surrounded by a lot of colleagues and a coffee machine and a coffee machine and a lot of things going on, people want to focus, right? And so they just want to block out the noise, and it has nothing to do with hearing protection. So we really understood there in those 6 to 9 months that besides protection, hearing comfort is also really important. Giving people control over how life sounds so they can really do whatever they want, sleep tight, be focused, enjoy the party, ride a motorcycle, all these kind of things. So in the first year after COVID, our audiences have shifted heavily, and the way that we communicate obviously has shifted heavily as well. And that has led to probably one of the key momentums in our story, which was in December 2020, a couple of days after Black Friday, where for us, our first organic influencer went viral. And when I say organic, I mean someone that we didn't know up front. It was actually our followers on Instagram telling us, like, hey guys, do you know that there's someone talking about you on TikTok? And she's really telling the story of Loop. And in short, her story was, okay, I'm at the end of my day. I have my kids here. They're playing, fighting. I'm cooking. There's a lot of noise going on. My partner is in conf calls and stuff like that. And I'm about to lose my cool. So what I do then is I use my earplugs.
Yeah.
These earplugs that were originally designed for nightlife are really awesome because basically they bring it down a little bit without shutting me out. So I still hear my kids. I still hear my partner. I'm connected to everything that happens in the house, but it's just a little bit less overwhelming and helps me to stay calm. And that was really, we were doing influencer marketing before that, but that was where everything sort of clicked for us.
Yeah.
And it was a snowball that also triggered the avalanche that was the success of 2021 for us. So key momentum.
So we'll dive into, you know, kind of that shift, but you said that you were doing influencer marketing before. Can you describe how you were doing it?
I think we were mostly looking at what other brands were doing and sort of having the let's get some extra eyeballs on our product kind of approach. You see this typically in fashion, and we look a lot at the fashion industry because we see our Loop earplugs as being an accessory, jewelry, at least to some extent. So very much looking into that and trying to jump on trends and trending people and, mm-hmm. and really looking at like how big is the reach that we can get. And let's see if they can communicate something about our product. And that really never took off. Like we had some small successes, but more fails than successes really. So yeah. It wasn't really working out for us. And when that post happened with KC is her name, the first mm-hmm. thing that we did was actually jump on a call with her so that Perfect. She could explain like, okay, why is this resonating so much? Why has this post gone viral? Why do we see almost immediately that people from her following bought Loop and then start creating their own content and really having that, yeah, that viral on viral effect, if you like, yeah. within their audiences. And where it sort of clicked for us is that there were a couple of things that needed to come together. First of all, we needed someone that was giving a testimonial, really, from a very authentic place. And you could easily relate, especially in that first video that she made, like you could see her kids playing and fighting and making a lot of noise. And yeah. everyone's like, yes, I've been there. This makes a lot of sense. And then from there on, she bridges into, and this is the way that the product helps me. So that was really, she was talking from a very, very genuine, authentic perspective about mm-hmm. the brand without us, obviously, because we didn't know her before her yeah. post, without us scripting anything. And then I think the second part of the equation is really the audience that is listening to this authoritative person. Is this why they are following this person? Are they open and are they used to this kind of content? I'm going to yeah. give you another example where that doesn't work at all. You know that motorcycling is an audience for us that can be really good because yeah. when you drive a motorcycle, you will get hearing damage at higher speeds on the highway. Mm-hmm. And so you have a lot of great, great, great accounts on motorcycling. And what they typically do is put a really nice chick on a motorcycle. Photo looks amazing, gets a lot of engagement. That is awesome. But then if you get that person to talk about, well, yes, let's protect our ears when I'm riding on the highway or when it helps me focus on the track, that is not the kind of content that their audience is used to receiving.
Absolutely.
And so when you try to sort of force it into that, in our experience, it doesn't work at all. So when that thing happened with KC for us, that was really the click. We need people that are genuinely enthusiastic about our brand and our product, that have a way to telling their own experience and that have an audience that is used to having these kind of content shared with them. And that's where the magic happens.
So it sounds like that's the equation that you found. Now, how are you or what are you guys doing right now to kind of execute on that equation and make sure you're finding those authentic creators, influencers, and also finding the right audience? What are you guys doing differently in your program?
I think one of the big drivers is that we have our internal influencer marketing team
yeah.
that basically source everyone that we work with. Initially, it was a very manual process, let's say, where we try to find people using hashtags, using trends, looking at audiences, yeah. people that were very engaged in comments and these kind of things on content that was already created. And we were working from that, but we tried it a couple of times with like agencies and freelancers. For us, it didn't really work because, again, we need to have this connection with the brand, and who better than our own people, our own team, to deliver that story and really work on that connection with the creators, right? So that is definitely one of the key things. And then, well, obviously, when you scale, you need some tools and some processes to really get it going, because very fast we're doing 50 to 100 campaigns per quarter. You can imagine that.
You said that 50 to 100 campaigns per
yeah.
quarter?
Yeah.
That's a lot. That's a yeah. lot of campaigns with influencers.
Absolutely. It's one of our most profitable channels that we have, not only purely for revenue and ROI, but the way that we engage with the communities, the insights that we get from that. It's all so rich that we actually invest quite heavily in influencer marketing.
Well, let's talk about that. So originally with influencer marketing, you said that it was more about eyeballs, more about just kind of brand awareness and all of that stuff. So is with now having your equation, having your team, what are your objectives? Like, what's your primary objective now? Is it revenue and then brand awareness, or is it still brand awareness?
No, it's very much revenue focused at the moment. I will say that we are sort of diversifying our strategy a little bit, more adding on top of the revenue-based campaigns. So we have a lot of focus, and it's really, it's a pretty high percentage of the revenue that we do that comes through through influencers and creators. We track that with discount codes. So it gives us a fairly good idea on what happens. So that is really important. Next to that, we are now more exploring, let's say, with awareness as well, but with the big challenge on how do you measure success. It's not about views.
Yeah.
It's not even about likes. It's what happens after that, right? And that's one of the challenges that we have at the moment. How do we measure success, and how do we really act on the signals that we see? How do we scale up? How do we scale down? And then a third one is that a lot of the content that we see working really well organically, so within the audiences of the influencers and the creators, we very often see that content work really well on the paid social acquisitions as well.
Nice.
And very often it's even a multiple of what we do on the organic campaign, so to speak. So content creation is also a very, very important aspect of everything that we do with the influencers and the creators. So that is probably whereas up until now, which was very much focused on that revenue generation, we now expand more into, okay, how can we get relevant awareness?
Yeah.
And how can we scale content creation for the different channels that we have?
What I really appreciate about what you guys have done is it's like you're asking, all right, what else? What else can we do? So we know that it's working, but let's see if we can squeeze a little bit more from it, which I think is really important for a lot of brands to hear, because too often I think that people think of influencer marketing as a little bit of like this siloed strategy, right? I've got my influencer, they're going to post, they're going to do the discount code, and that's going to be that. And then I'm not going to think about it. But to me, it sounds like you have more of a long-term strategy when it comes to building those relationships with influencers. Would you say that's accurate?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Especially the influencers that have a successful first campaign with us.
Yeah.
By definition, we're going to continue working with them, see where that brings us, because these people already know us. We know them.
Yeah.
We know that we can trust them. We know that their audience is reacting really good on what they are sharing. So it would even be stupid, I think, not to go through and have a follow-up with these people. And today, roughly 60% of the results that we see from our influence campaign, 60% is coming from new influence, so to speak, and 40% is coming from relationships that we already had and that we are harvesting further. So yes, the long term, and it makes a lot of sense also, right? If you really source specifically for people that are genuinely enthusiastic about your brand and have a good testimonial to share, well, you can do that more than once in a very relevant way, right? So that is a very, very, very important part for us. Another thing, and I absolutely agree with you, like, it's good to have ownership over a couple of specific areas of marketing, but let's not think into silos, because it is not a silo. It's a customer journey that goes through all these different phases, where influencer marketing is only one of them. And so, yes, absolutely, we share constantly. A second part is also really important is if you look at the engagement, and then I'm talking about the comments that are happening or responses that are happening on the content that's being created, there's a gold mine of information in there as well, because there you see what people in real life, when they are talking to their friends, the words that they are using, the triggers that are important to them. So these are then again fed back on how we draft our landing pages, on our creatives that we use on social, paid social and organic social, what we use in email, etc. So it all connects, and they're having this close connection and this genuine connection to the creators and their communities, again, is a goldmine of information to be used in all these other channels as well. So yeah, it's very much part of a long-term strategy for us.
That is such great insight to share as well too, is taking a look at the comments. I think oftentimes one of the strategies as a marketer to get that out of, like, you know, finding the common language of your consumers and your audience is to send out a survey and ask them those questions. Like, this is such an authentic and organic way to get that feedback. Now, is that when you were talking about it earlier about, like, the insights and the feedback that you get from influencers and creators that you use, were you talking about just like kind of the comment section, or do you actually, you know, ask your creators and influencers feedback on like the product itself?
We do in various ways. First of all, every campaign that we start with gifting the product, and we've obliged, is that in English word? People have to test our product before they can make any content for us, by definition. Okay. They need to test it. They need to give us the feedback. And if we believe that they are genuinely enthusiastic about the product, then okay, that's a go. And from there on, we continue. Yeah. When I say we continue, we actually do very, very little. Like, there's always a little bit of negotiation going around, but like, scripting is something that we don't do. There's just three words that people can't use because we know it's confusing and people tend to use them. And it doesn't really work. It upsets people afterwards. So it's not like, don't say this, this, and that. Like earbuds, for example, can be used both for earplugs and earphones. So let's not use earbuds because of the potential confusion. But besides that, we script nothing at all. We review what content is being generated, of course. But we either it's a complete no-go because it just doesn't fit at all the story and it's not correct. Or it's just like, okay, let's go. Let's see what it gives. And then very often, we're very surprised by stuff that if we wanted to script, we would have changed stuff, parts of the content. But then because of a strategy, you're like, no, let's keep it authentic. Let's see what it gives. And then you have some that are really, really out there and that perform miraculously. So there again, long-term strategy, genuine testimonials, that's what works, at least for us.
I love it. Now, do you concentrate on a particular type of influencer? Like, does follower count even matter to you? Because I think that a lot of brands will say, okay, micro influencers really work. Macro influencers, which are the ones that, like, you know, over 100K work. Like, do you have a good creator mix, or does that even play into like finding the right group of creators and influencers to represent your brand?
We try to diversify. Indeed, it's not always a very important metric in the way that, again, we concentrate on what's the storytelling here that we're gonna bring, and the audience is mainly gonna be a driver in the negotiation on pricing and stuff like that. But to give you an idea, there's a little over 20 to 25% that are macro influence, so bigger than 200,000 followers. There's about half of them what we call medium, so between 60 and 200,000, and then 30% roughly micro-influence. So there is a split there. We are still very much scale-up, so in terms of budgets, we can't work with the millions and millions kind of following profiles. So for now, we haven't built any experience with those. But we do try to keep it quite general. And maybe lately it has changed a little bit, but especially in the beginning of COVID, then really TikTok took off as well. It was getting very, very popular, and a segment that worked really well for us is what we call the momfluencers. So moms basically sharing all their tips and tricks to get through day. And we had a post in the beginning. I think the creator had 150 or 200 followers. So virtually nothing, so to speak. And that content was seen 300,000 times. That was still two years ago. That was on TikTok. That was still perfectly doing. And again, going back to that, it was an organic influencer as well. She was actually from the following of KC. She emerged from that. So especially back then, virality was still very, very much much possible. Still is today to a certain extent. So we don't look too much at following. The quality of the audience is way, way more important.
But how do you find that quality of an audience? Like, I think that's got to be really hard.
It is hard. again, it is why we have our people working in the influencer marketing team internally, because they really have to develop that taste. A second strategy that we also apply is just asking our successful creators, like, who do you look up to? Who do you follow?
Love
who do you
that.
Think yeah. would be a good creator for us? And you would be amazed what kind of input that you get from that, not only just because of the content that they share, it's a warm referral, because you can say to the new guy, hey, this or that person thinks we should have collaboration together, shall we start talking? So already that helps, facilitates a lot of making the connection with them. But it happened a couple of times as well that they say, well, you know, guys, you're actually working a lot with a particular type of influence. If you want to diversify a little bit more, think about profiles like this, this, and this person. And that is really awesome, because they actually actively contribute to basically our influencer strategy.
I love that you have such a relationship with the influencers in your program, because it sounds like through that relationship, you gain insights on, like, you know, your customer's audience, or not customer audience. You gain insight on, you know, customer language, but insights on, like, your product, true testimonials. So you get content, you also get revenue, and you're also able to ask them, you know, which influencers or who they look up to. So it sounds like you're getting a ton from your entire program. Now, what is that the value that you would say that your influencer program drives for your brand, is getting all of those things? Or how would you describe the value that you're getting from influencers?
Well, I think you summed it up really well. I'm not sure what more I could ask for. No, it's really about that. It's a channel that has the highest ROI, if you would consider the fee that we pay our influencers as an acquisition cost. So ROI is super high. The quality of the content that we then use in paid campaigns is super high. The insights that we get, you can't have them much more direct. From both talking and reading the comments of the posts. So that is really awesome as well. And then they help us expand. I'm not sure what more I could ask for.
Well, I think sometimes the struggle is, you know, because everything's a business, right? We're in it to make money. Obviously, we need to keep the lights on. So I think that as a brand, when you're investing in any sort of marketing strategy, you want to see a return on investment when it comes to dollars. So I wonder how you in your seat evaluate, like, that ROI that you're getting from content, that ROI that you are getting from the insights. Like, if you were talking to, you know, another buddy from another brand about influencers, and, you know, they're saying, like, but no, I'm not getting it because I'm not getting the revenue that I want from this, you know, from this particular strategy. I mean, how do you articulate that value of everything else and how that should be counted as part of the return on investment? Does that question make sense? It's very wordy.
I think it does. I'm pretty convinced that the strategy that we apply also does not work for every brand or every kind of product.
Okay.
I do think that it works particularly well for us because we have a big impact on people's lives quality. Very often it's a surprise for them. They discover our product category, or at least the way that we approach this, through influencer marketing. So, and especially if you go into some of the bigger customer groups that we work with, the bigger communities who are noise sensitive people, definitely not limited to, but including neurodivergent people. So people with autistic people, people with ADHD, these people use our products on a daily basis. Some of them 24/7. And the impact on their life quality is very, very big. And they are very vocal about it in their communities as well. So that is an important driver of all the engagement that we get. That community feel is really, really important. And I am convinced that not every product will have such a strong pull within certain communities like we have with ours. And I do think that's one of the key differentiators on why we can do this the way that we do it. Of course, some of the things that I mentioned are true for every business and every product.
Yeah.
You can always get insights if you target authentic testimonials. You're gonna get insights out of those. If you ask the right questions, you will get them. So that goes for every business. But the scalable way that we can do it, probably not for everyone or not every brand.
Well, this has been so insightful. I've got one last question for you. And you know, it wouldn't be the podcast, and this is also the customer spotlight. So I would love to hear how Grin has helped you evolve your program.
It's the next step in our scaling journey. We started off with Arena in September 2020, if I'm not mistaken. So almost 2 years ago. She was doing a lot of different stuff, definitely not being focused on influencer marketing alone. Doing everything organically within the platforms. From there, our focus was turning more and more into working with the influencers and the creators. And then you get into challenges with getting in touch with them, getting consent to use all the creatives, continuing finding people. Because yes, of course, we ask our creators to help us out, but that's not always the solution to everything. And so it was really getting decent processes and structure and scalability that we get through a tool like Grin, which has been a tremendous help for us. We can now also monitor our performance through our different Shopify shops that we have. So yeah, it's been everything that we do. We're getting a lot more mature, right? Up until a year ago, like literally 12 months ago, it was only 7 of us, I think, at this point of the year. Today we're 45.
That's insane.
And looking to continue growing like we've been doing. So we need a lot more tools, and we use a lot more tools to really help us continuing the scaling. Grin has been a key tool in the influencer marketing team.
I love it. Well, thank you so much for letting me steal so much of your time. I appreciate all of the insights that you brought to me, and then also all of our listeners. So thank you so much.
It was absolutely awesome to be able to share our story and insights, Katya. So thank you very much for that. And it was very nice talking to you as well.
We'll be in touch soon.
Awesome. Thank you.
I love to hear a brand story as well as how they incorporate creators as a strategy. What I really found so fascinating about the Loop Earplug story was the pivot. The pandemic really impacted the world, obviously, and there are many brands that just didn't make it. The way that they were able to take a step back and ask what more was so key to their success. And then understanding the value of creators to share their new strategy has just added to that successful pivot. Remember, you always get brand awareness, community, revenue, and content from implementing a strategy with creators. How much of each takes a strong relationship between creator and brand to achieve that mutual success? Treat creators like your brand revolves around them, because in the creator economy, it does. Be sure to subscribe to the Grin Gets Real podcast for more customer spotlight stories and marketing strategy. Give us some stars and write a review. Tell me your favorite episode. Connect with me on social, Katya Allison, and you can find me on LinkedIn. And if you're interested in learning more about Grin, visit our website at grin.co. Until next time, keep grinning.